we all have disordered affections in some way, shape, or form. And what we do with those is we offer those up to Christ and live in accordance with his word. We don't want to make spaces for our disordered affections in the church, except in the sense that we space to confess them and seek help in remedying them or abstaining from acting on them.
Welcome to the Stand Firm podcast. We are recording this episode on Tuesday, December 2nd, 2025. I'm Nick Lannon of Grace Anglican Church in Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm here with Matt Kennedy of the Anglican Church of the Good Shepherd in Binghamton, New York, and J.D. Koch of Holy Trinity Parish in Hillsdale, Michigan. Guys, how are you doing today?
Excellent. How are you?
Great, Nick. Thanks.
Good. We took the Thanksgiving holiday off last week. How were your celebrations? Matt, I assume you cooked your turkey perfectly.
It came out all right. It was one of the better years, actually. It was really good. Had a good time. First time we had my son married at the table with his new wife, and she's pregnant. So that
praise
was
the Lord.
Pretty something to celebrate.
Amen.
Really great. And my oldest daughter just got engaged the week before Thanksgiving, so there was a whole bunch to celebrate.
Rejoicing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amen.
Every
Do you
time
all have Thanksgiving services?
We used to. We don't anymore.
Is that because you stopped loving the country and our founding? Is that why? Is it the
No, they used to be an ecumenical service, and several of the churches in the ecumenical council became.
Those can be painful.
Yeah. So
I know I'm still on the I'll redact it for the sake of the community, but I'm still on a list of a local ecumenical service reminder, and it is just it's a constant reminder for me, but not of the ecumenical service, but of what I have left. But no, we had a Thanksgiving service. It's the first time, I guess, we had not done it in Hilton Head, but there or Christchurch for that matter. But when we were at St. Francis, we did yearly, Nick, if you remember.
Which is why my first act is planter of our church is to not have a Thanksgiving Day service, because it was always my role as the associate rector.
That's true. Well, someone had to reach long enough to pick up all of the canned goods and bless them on the altar. That was a very important sacramental part. I was interested there. I mean, I don't know. In retrospect, it was not a turning point, but it was marked a new sort of vista in my thinking with respect to church and state and all the various things. I don't know. Maybe as I was watching the new that ad for the Hillsdale has an online class for colonial America. It's really good. It's free. It's really well done. A friend of mine here in the church produced it, but I was watching that in the lead up and got all fired up about the providential nature of the founding
cool.
of our country. Yeah, it's very cool. Anyway,
I can't watch anybody put a turkey into an oven anymore without thinking of several years ago, Matt Kennedy rant about shielding the turkey breast with foil, or else you'll ruin it.
Yeah, or else your breast is going to cook a lot faster than your
right.
dark meat, and you'll have a dry turkey.
Just burned into my brain. I can't let it go.
Glad. That's good.
Which is the reason why the only way to cook a turkey is to deep fry it, of course. And so, you know, and otherwise, you don't bread it; you just deep fry it. So,
right.
So there we have it.
Well, guys, there is another ACNA church that seems like it might need some disinfecting light shed on it. A recent Religion News Service article mentioned a C4SO parish, Christ Our Advocate, in Wheaton, Illinois, as part of a story about Christians and their interactions, at least following and documenting, if not explicitly interfering, with immigration and customs enforcement agents in their community. Now, Stand Firm's Mark Marshall got curious about that church and dug around a bit on their website, finding lots of questionable material in sermons that he details in a Substack post that we'll link to in the show notes. But perhaps most concerning, and the thing that puts Christ Our Advocate in a very similar position to Luminous Church, which we talked about several months ago, a church which has now left ACNA, is a page on their website detailing their, quote, posture toward the LGBTQ+ community, in which they say the following, quote, "We welcome LGBTQ+ siblings as beloved members of Christ's body and fellow disciples of Jesus. Our desire is that we would be a community in which gay and or same-sex attracted people are not left to make sense of their sexuality alone. Rather, we want our parish to be a place where we can all share our stories, find community, and seek support on our journey of transformation into Christ-likeness. We also seek to have the same posture for trans individuals, gender diverse individuals, and individuals with gender dysphoria. They then claim that their practice, which they leave undefined, quote, conforms to the constitution and canons of our diocese, C4SO, and the ACNA. So guys, is this church saying and doing things in the way that our bishops would have us say and do them?
I mean, I think we look no further than the College of Bishops statement from 2022 or 23. I can't remember which one of those.
22, I think.
Yeah, where Anglicans or Christians who are also Anglican or not to be identified by their sexual, wherever they feel sexually, were identified by Christ. And those desires that go contrary to Christ are part of the flesh, which we confess as sin. And that's the ACNA position. But at least from what you read, that does not sound like the ACNA position. It doesn't sound like what came out of the college. It doesn't even sound like our constitutional or canonical view of what of sexuality is, because we reject wholeheartedly the idea undergirding the trans movement, the idea that a person can identify as something other than his own her own God-given biological sex, or that you how you feel sexually determines who you are sexually. Like if you are drawn toward another man and you're a man, that you're there, you become this being, this gay being. No,
that's
you're,
right.
You're a man who has disordered affections, and that's we all have disordered affections in some way, shape, or form. And what we do with those is we offer those up to Christ and live in accordance with his word. We don't want to make spaces for our disordered affections in the church, except in the sense that we space to confess them and seek help in remedying them or abstaining from acting on them. So, yeah, I think that that part of the website is very, very slippery. And they notice there's no, sometimes churches, they're trying to be more open, will it lead, but also remain quote unquote orthodox, will say, make a distinction between people who act on their desires and people who don't. But I think Luminous did this very same thing where it just talks about people who are LGBTQ,
right,
gay or straight, trans, without distinguishing between those who are trying to live faithfully with those desires and those who aren't. And that's a classic thing. You just say, and so you, that statement is a signal, I think, to people who are living in same-sex relationships or in whatever kinds of sexual relationships you want to name, that this church will not challenge you on that and won't bring you to conviction about that. And the little note about the ACNA canons and constitution, that was, oh, come on. What, yeah. Why don't you say what the ACNA believes about this? If your practice conforms to the ACNA, why don't you say what the ACNA believes?
Well, I suspect, though they don't elucidate it here, that their practice only refers to their probable refusal to perform weddings. I bet that's the line they draw. And therefore, they claim that their quote-unquote practice conforms. But really what their practice is LGBTQ plus brothers and sisters in every level of leadership, whether or not they're acting out on their desires.
I think you're probably right. I mean, I'm sure our listener goes to this church, and so please call in and correct us. But, you know, as I read this, I mean, I had the biggest internal eye roll that I can muster and just sighed because, you know, it's just so tiresome. I mean, there's so many questions, you know, not only to the leadership, obviously, of the diocese, like to what extent is the bishop is aware of this and to what extent is this allowed in direct contravention of the House of Bishops statement about, at the very least, calling people gay Christians, like you said. You know, you almost think they would like have a link to the web archive of the gay Anglicans letter, you know, as part of their, this is what we actually think. But, you know, beyond that, it's that what is the purpose of being an ACNA, you know, quote unquote conservative Anglican church with this as part of your public facing statement or witness, for lack of a better word, other than just kind of, you know, dripping with sanctimony and self-righteousness about, you know, those other perhaps other type Anglicans, certainly those other Christians who aren't as enlightened or as inclusive as we are here at this Christ Our Advocate Church. The irony, of course, even in the name of that, is that,
Right.
at the very least, it comes
Why do you
from
need an advocate?
that's right. If any man sins, we have an advocate, Jesus Christ the righteous, and he is the propitiation for our sins, only as understood by us in the 21st century, not by culturally bound misogynists like the Apostle Paul and the writers of the New Testament. But it's just, for me, it's, I just don't understand. I guess, I mean, I wish someone would help clarify it. Help me see how you could have gotten involved in our church, how you could be a part of our ongoing mission and witness in good conscience and still have something like this, other than, and this is not to be conspiratorial, but like the only thing I can see is that they're hoping it changes. Is that they're hoping that this is, however small, prophetic witness against the tyranny of the traditionalists or whatever, that somehow over time they're going to move the dial over. And then to what? And then that's my final question, would be to what? So then we could just be like, I don't know, the PCUSA, the Episcopal Church, the insert mainline and or progressive denomination here, which is always an option and always available. And it would love to have, I'm sure, any warm bodies at all, even in little small towns like Hillsdale, the mainline churches are dying on the vine. And so we can talk at length about how it's an error. We've done this, I mean, just in part for the entire time we've been doing this podcast, but I'm interested in like, what is the purpose of it? Like, what's the end game for this? And why is it, and that's one question. And then the other question is, why is it allowed? We don't have some sort of like Inquisition that's going to come in and defrock someone at the first instance of an error or a misunderstanding or something he misguided. I mean, we saw that even with the Dear Anglicans letter. There was a kind of a there was a little bit of conflict and iron sharpening iron, and then things settled down and we've moved on. And I think we're stronger and clearer as a province as a result of that. And yet, here we are once again, with what everybody else can see clearly, and yet from within, we have sort of slow walking kid gloves. And I don't know. It's frustrating is a word, and I know that's on an emotion wheel that's very close to other words, but I'll just it's making me very frustrated.
Well, I think the answer to your first question is a very simple one. The end game is just like you said, they hope that eventually churches like ours will either change or have to find another structure to be in, just like we, I think, hope that a church like this will either change or find another structure to be in. It's the other question that I think is more pressing, which is, again, we've asked many, many times, which is what kind of church does the ACNA want to be, and what is it willing to do to become that?
Well, there's the old famous dictum that you when heresy or leftist theology is tolerated, then it's going to become predominant over time. If you tolerate it, then you're already giving license to it. Give license to it, it spreads, and then ultimately orthodoxy becomes the theology that is prescribed. So. Or is it proscribed? Yeah, proscribed.
Proscribed, yeah.
So that's the trajectory. So, and it really does happen. Like, organizations that allow themselves to drift left end up being left. So we have, I think the bishops have a choice. I mean, the bishops have a have and I've said this every time this happens, which what's his number six? This is the sixth church.
You're taking
So
crazy pills, Matt.
right.
You're
It's this
taking.
is I think this is the sixth church. I think all six have been from the same diocese.
And the same tired, hackneyed, progressive, phrases, the same appeals to love and inclusion and journey and all these various, identity walks and all the stuff that's just so tiresome. I mean, it's like, give me like a progressive slow walk bingo card and we'd have been out of here in 5 seconds after 10, one web page on any of these church websites. I mean, and I think, and just to be clear, when we talk about conservatism or something, we're simply talking about biblical orthodoxy. We're not talking about, political or even liturgical. We're not advocating for some sort of Well, I would be advocating for a little bit more uniformity across the province with respect to churchmanship and outward vestiture. That being said, I wouldn't want to raise an alarm over that in the same way as these fundamental cultural flashpoints that have already been adjudicated and articulated by our leadership. So what other structures, like what else do we have? I mean, we have an incredibly clear, as we've said years ago, faithful and very courageous and actually prescient and forward-thinking statement on human identity and this quote-unquote gay Christian language that I think of the things that the Picalsa Bishop has produced, it's among the best, if not the best, other than the Jerusalem Declaration for Anglican theology and practice. And so what's the point of that if we don't use it, if we don't refer to it, and if it doesn't become some sort of standard that we can judge ourselves by?
Well, I mean, this is what Anglicans do well, right? We put out statements and we publish words, and then the question is, are they going to be enforced or acted upon? And the sad story of Anglicanism worldwide is that it's a very often they're not, and that's why we're a shattered and ruptured body, because we don't act on our doctrine. And so, like this, I said just a minute ago that this isn't a when we talk about conservatism, we're not talking about political conservatism, we're talking about orthodoxy, which is true. Sometimes the two come together, and certainly like pro-life opposition to gay marriage. But the people who would most critique people like you and I for being too political are people who like this. In fact, I've been told by one of the pastors there, Emily McGowan, that we're just too political. But then I go read, if you think that about us, go read the excerpts from the sermons that Mark Marshall has supplied in his article today.
And then
It's
listen to our
remarkable.
sermons.
Yeah, and listen to our sermon. Those sermons, they could be for furthest left recesses of the left. And they're repenting of their homo they're repenting not of their homophobia, of our homophobia, of our
That's right.
racism, and take down the list of all the evils that the political ideological left would lay at the feet of Christians. And that's the tenor of their sermons. And I think it has no place in the church. Now Mark's focusing on some of these sermons which encourage people to be the among those tracking ICE agents and disrupting their duties. And it's couched in terms of we're helping the Sojourner, and these ICE members are like the Gestapo coming through and destroying our communities. And you wouldn't get a sense from any of these sermons that the people being sought are legally present. But the thing is, you can disagree. A Christian can disagree about immigration policy. A Christian can disagree about how you enforce or don't enforce it or whatever. But actually, a Christian taking a step to disrupt and possibly identify ICE agents as they go about their duties endangers their lives. Again, I have no problem with if you want to go to the No Kings protest or whatever, that's fine. But I mean, don't go and actually take action against officers of the law fulfilling their duties, especially not in the name of under the cross.
I mean, I guess you could see potential parallel drawn to people who were hiding Jews during World War II and who would have wanted to track and make a problem for anybody who was seeking them out. I mean, obviously, that's a freighted comparison to make, but I'm sure that's the kind of comparison. I mean, the word Gestapo was used in a sermon, so that is the analogy that they're trying to make.
Right, but of course, the only thing that was illegal about the Jewish person was the illegal law, the Nuremberg laws that began to circumscribe their freedoms in Germany, and on the basis of their just being German, but being Jewish.
Right.
Many of the people who, a lot of the people who were rounded up and sent to concentration camps had fought in World War I for Germany. Their citizenship was not even in question. They weren't doing anything illegal. They were there already when the Nazi regime came forward and promulgated laws that made them illegal. But from my understanding, what's happening right now is, and again, disagree with the policy if you like, but this is not focused on any one race or ethnicity. It is focused on people who are here, who've come into our country illegally and are availing themselves of the services and the benefits of our country and taking those resources away from people who have come here legally or who have lived here for generations.
It does seem like there are believable stories of U.S. citizens who've been caught up in this sort of accidental things, mistakes are made, and those should be resisted and corrected for sure. But yeah, this
Absolutely.
Is not a one-to-one correlation to Nazi Germany.
Well, and I think that's you know, to draw it a little bit further, just back in terms of general hermeneutical principles, that, you know, it's always the case, at least has been my experience with progressive Christians, is that, you know, whenever there's an analogy made, for instance, to something like America being, you know, God's holy land, or some sort of Old Testament analogy to sort of more traditional ordering of society along Old Testament lines, it immediately sounds an alarm that you're being Christian nationalist or you're being theocratic, or, you know, that's the old covenant, or some sort of immediate dismissal of the biblicism or the idolatry of the state or family or something like this. And yet, any time that the Old Testament can be marshaled in defense of a progressive political talking point, whatever the case may be, all of a sudden, America becomes synonymous with the covenant people of God in the Old Testament. And the prophets are speaking directly to us in the exact same way that they spoke to exiles returning from, you know, returning to rebuild the wall or something. And again, I think that as we've even just experienced in this slight interaction, there's a very interesting conversation to be had and has always been a part of the various spheres of the state, the church and the family, or the estates, I would say, with respect to how they interrelate, you know, how much can one speak into the other, where the various levels of responsibility. You know, I've just been reading some of the sermons, as a collected volumes of the sermons of the American political founding, and it's fascinating to see how tightly they walk this line between, you know, outright call for revolution, at the same time recognizing tyranny and biblical injunctions against overreach of power and you know, the sinfulness of man and all the things. And I'm not saying that they were exactly right about it. It's just been an interesting kind of juxtaposition of that, given our current conversation. And I think to your point, Nick, it's the preaching of this from the pulpit without qualification, and essentially, as is the office, thus saith the Lord. You know, I mean, that's quite a hubristic thing to do, you know, when it is not, as it were, as clear on the ground as perhaps it might be at some point or has been in the past. But it's certainly at the moment, it seems to be that good Christian people can disagree and probably would disagree, like, for instance, in coffee hour or maybe in a local city hall or a school board meeting. I mean, that's where these conversations take place, even among Christians. But to stand up in a pulpit and say, with the righteous fervor of the prophet, that this is how Christians are acting, and these people represent so and so from the Bible, and you are this and that. That's just quite a bold thing to say, and one that I've, for instance, I would be much more hesitant to wade into than they certainly seem to be. But to your point again, Nick, I think that clearly that's the implication, that this is as clear as historical events have been, and history will prove that they will have been the prophetic voices that dared to speak when no one else would. And, you know, there's a lot of that's a powerful cocktail to consume, if that's what you really believe.
As Rick James would say, that's a hell of a drug.
I was trying not to cuss. So there we go.
Are we going to have to put the explicit label on the show now?
That's right. Because you said Rick James. That's right.
I'm interested because of the power of that drug. I think that, so in their little, the statement that I read at the top of the show about welcoming LGBTQ plus siblings as beloved members of Christ's body and fellow disciples of Jesus. If you do that, why wouldn't you marry them to each other? If they are beloved members of the body of Christ and fellow disciples of Jesus, there shouldn't be anything standing in their way. So if you get to the end of the statement and they say that their practice conforms to the Constitution and canons of C4SO and the ACNA, because of the power of that drug, of being more loving, perhaps even than God, which one of those is going to crumble? And it's the conformity to the Constitution and canons of the ACNA that's going to crumble.
Obviously.
Because you can't let your righteousness in love crumble away. You're going to have to hold on to that. And so it's the other thing. Eventually, some point in the future, they will no longer be able to conform. They will see themselves as prophetic in that way too.
Well, particularly if you, I mean, you know, just join the ACNA, or even like we have, I mean, sort of have been a part of it from its inception, or at least have been watching it for decades. I still would never stand before what I believe to be the actual word of God and the call of the scriptures on the life of a preacher and say, well, I'm sorry, my bishop won't allow me to do this. So therefore I'm just going to stand by and let this gross atrocity be perpetuated. And so, to your point, Nick, if you think that this is immoral, unloving, and ultimately unchristian, well, then yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of time, either before they leave the ACNA or sort of provoke some sort of public censure by doing something that's obviously in violation of our canons, in the hope that, you know, truth will win and love will be shown for what it really is. I mean, I can just imagine how you can get yourself worked up into this very easily when you have that righteous indignation on your side. And I'm sympathetic to righteous indignation when it's grounded in the scriptures and confirmed by tradition and reason and part of the, you know, non-negotiable aspects of the faith. But when it comes to something like this, which is exact opposite or contrary to those very foundations, you know, you say, well, they used to walk with us and now they walk apart. I mean, that's what we have said. That was the founding part of the founding statement of our province. And I'm not surprised that there are churches who disagree with us, but I'm disappointed that there are churches within our province that are allowed to flaunt the convictions that in no small part were part of our founding, part of our reason for coming into existence in the first place.
You know, in this case too, I mean, one of the people in this church, one of the ordained people in this church is Emma McGowan, who's prominent in the diocese. She's not a low level person. She's the canon one of the canon theologians.
Yeah.
For the diocese. So, I mean, that makes it difficult to believe that the bishop wasn't aware of these things. I'm not going to say he was, but it's, we've now had six churches from the same diocese. This one, I think, is probably more visible because of Emily McGowan's presence there. And I think as each one of these churches pops up and the spotlight is shown on them and they have to make a decision about leaving the ACNA, I think it becomes less and less plausible that nobody knows. We just, nobody can know anything in this diocese. Wow, we're so surprised. This is such a, such a shock. I mean, I don't believe it. I'm having a hard time believing that. I won't say I don't believe it. I'm saying I'm a real hard time wrapping my mind around that. And it seems to be maybe just a widespread ethos that, you know, when a fish doesn't know it's wet, a fish is just swimming in the water. So that's just the way, that's normal. It's Tuesday, right? So maybe one of the reasons why these churches aren't, setting off any bells in the diocese is because they're all like that. That's the water. And these are just the fish and they don't know they're wet. So until someone else sees it outside the diocese and points it out, something needs to be done, I think, about this problem that's become so prominent, and we're going to have more. I'm sure we're going to have more. So,
well, I don't think it's incidental that it's also near Wheaton, you know, and we've talked about Wheaton before, but I think I'd be interested in what Wheaton's stance towards, what their posture towards these things are. Also, you know, if you were on your journey as a confused 17-year-old freshman and you arrived at Wheaton, will you be lovingly shepherded along your journey towards depravity and you know, or will you be lovingly convicted and led back towards the Lord? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that answer would be, but that's, you know, when I hear this type of language from it, you know, and it sounds so loving and inclusive and progressive, and the posture seems so forward-thinking and all the things. You just actually think on the ground, particularly in a college town with people who come, if the statistics are right, they're coming from evangelical, kind of more low church, for lack of a better word, churches, and are experimenting with, or at least trying out more liturgical historic formations of the faith. And then they stumble into this one, and this is not a bait and switch, really, with respect to what the actual historic, traditional church for biblical church would be. But I could just see, this sort of morass, this wave of confusion, just continuing to wash over these students who perhaps are confused and are on some sort of misguided wandering journey about all sorts of things, not the least of which their quote unquote sexuality.
Yeah,
And then
this is
they have,
perpetuating that confusion.
yeah,
You can
that's
see it.
right.
I mean, you can see it. They blithely use the phrase gender diverse individuals as though that's not an explicit rejection of creation in Genesis 1 and 2. There are no such thing as gender diverse individuals. Male and female, he created them.
That's right. Well, and it's just funny. I mean, I'd want to try to, if I were like a subversive traditional muckraker or something, come in there and push the bounds on what the plus would be there,
Yeah,
and ask
exactly.
them, and what part of the journey are you on with my, insert egregious, horrific, sexual perversion here as part of my identity. And you'll reach an end, and you'll realize that it's actually not nearly as progressive as it purports to be. It was like, I remember having a discussion way back in the day. Remember when the Episcopal Church and the conservatives in the Episcopal Church were trying to argue that they just wanted to, well, the more progressively minded conservatives were saying, well, we could bless same-sex unions, or even in a certain sense marry them, because it's better to bring something disordered into order, even if it's fundamentally disordered. I mean, it was a little bit of a torturous logic, but the whole argument was that marriage would somehow bring some sort of, monogamy, sexual fidelity, And so I was like, and so I remember having this conversation, and I said, well, listen, okay, I'm going to grant you that premise. I disagree with it entirely, but I'm going to just grant it to you. And I said, so I can understand a liturgy that could bring two men or two women into an ordered, monogamous, respectful, loving, mutually giving, all the things, marriage, quote unquote. I was like, write me a liturgy for the B in the LGBTQ and then marry them. Or they said, oh, well, that's a little more confusing. I said, well then, so we would just bless the perpetually celibate bee, bisexual in this case, in which case they would just be a Christian who was struggling with, and so then there's no need for liturgy at all. And the conversation usually ended somewhat abruptly shortly after that, because the absurdity of the entire thing with respect to this long litany of identities, which at that time was only what, four or five. I think we were the first people, Nick, remember in the one of the rector's forums when they just came out with the IATQP plus, and then the two spirit
Two
was added,
Spirits
and
is
then
my
we said,
favorite, yeah.
and then there was one rector's forum, I think it was took like 2.5 minutes just to go through all of the various letters, and that was nothing. That was before Facebook came out with the 50 genders, So, I mean, again, that goes back to my main point about all of this, is it's tiresome, it's obvious, and it's in all senses of the word, pathetic, that this is, I don't know, seemingly subversive, seemingly, transgressive, pun intended, seemingly prophetic. And it's just, we've seen it before, it's nothing new, and it's there are churches out there that have celebrated this, have walked this line, and they're right there, but this is not one of them. And we have an episcopal structure, we have hierarchy, we have statements, convictions, and documents and doctrines that would seem to, at the very least, provide a entry point for a loving conversation, perhaps even resulting in a godly admonition. But here we are once again. And to your point, Matt, it is beginning to get harder and harder to believe that this is not, that these are features, not bugs, of this particular diocese. And I hope I'm wrong. We've said it before, but it seems like we can only go with what we've seen, because as far as I can tell, I mean, I don't know of any other diocese, if they've had one that has been so overt. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but certainly not just a succession. And as you pointed out, people of for lack of a better word, and that should know better, or should be have been vetted better, so that like when you get to a level of responsibility and oversight and authority within a particular diocese, you should probably know what not only the diocese believes, but by extension, what they have agreed to confess amongst the college for the sake of a province. Because, as far as we can tell, we can still say, well, that's just C4SO, that's just Christ Our Hope, that's just whatever. I mean, the fact remains that we still are part of a province, part of a church, however tenuously in communion with itself. And it's disheartening, very frankly, to see this. I'd much rather, I don't care if someone has a guitar and wears flip-flops and sings Taizé music. Exactly. I mean, that's not keep that doesn't keep me up at night in the same way. But again, going back to the, I mean, my kids aren't in college yet. Y'all's are older than mine are. But if I sent them to Wheaton, which I wouldn't, but also, but if I did, and then I thought they wandered into an ACNA church, I'd like to believe whatever their worship style was and whatever their, whatever spectrum on the intra-reformed dialogue they fell, that nevertheless they would be holding fast to the thing that we have devoted our lives to defending and propagating for the sake of biblical fidelity and the witness of the gospel to the world. And it's just disheartening to see that doesn't seem to at least be explicitly the case. I'd like to see that word, our practice conforms, is that's doing a lot of work there in their little statement. Like, that's carrying a lot of weight behind it, whatever it means, because that leaves begs it asks as many questions as it answers. I do think, just as an aside, in the full disclosure, with not preaching political sermons, I did have a AI Rush Limbaugh just come up and do my Thanksgiving sermon. So instead, he only mentioned Candace Owens once. I was surprised, but I didn't have enough ChatGPT
You
coin to keep him going.
failed her preacher's test. That's funny.
I didn't have enough ChatGPT to ask him any more questions before he returned to the ether. But
Your point, you did before we were when I ran out of time, I guess, but I do want to go back to something you said earlier, Jada. You're talking about how preaching is a serious thing, and one of the things we hated so much about having to remain in the Episcopal Church when we did is that the pulpit was so misused. It wasn't used for the purpose for which it was given. It was used for the political rally of the week. What political cause can we get behind this week?
Was
What
therapy for the preacher was often one of them too.
yeah, not that was true. And so to read those excerpts in Mark's article, I mean, it is such a travesty that the pulpit is being used in that way. And I know you're right. You're right. They would probably say, well, it's about the sojourner, and the Bible says to care for the sojourners. We're caring for the sojourner. We're caring for the outcast. I
That's
know
right.
that, so I don't doubt their sincerity and their earnestness and
They don't
that
mow
they
their
really
grass up
believe
to 10
themselves
feet on
equally.
either side of their church property, just for that matter.
Doing something right, but they've so wedded Christian, they so wrapped their political ideology around the cross that they can't tell the difference anymore. And that's ironic, given I think they also had a diatribe against Christian nationalism in there in one of those sermons. But here, where
I'm
do you,
sure.
I mean, this, there's no space between their ideology and the what they claim to be their Christianity. It's just a sad thing for the people in that congregation not to be able to hear the law and the gospel and hear about Jesus who died for them, but they have to hear about tracking ICE agents.
I guess we can hope that they do hear sometimes about Christ who died for them. We only have excerpts. I have not listened to these full sermons, but certainly if the excerpts are emblematic in any way, that would probably be what you walked out of the service with, rather than the freeing news of Christ's accomplishment for you. Are we done?
Yeah, I think we're done.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm mad now. I can't say anymore.
I know, yeah, so
Huh?
infuriating. Well, that's going to be all the time that we have today. Thank you for listening to Stand Firm, as always. If you want to keep the conversation going with us, be in touch. Rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Send us an email at mailbag@standfirminfaith.com or join the Anglicans for the Gospel Facebook group. Thanks to J.D. Koch and Matt Kennedy. I'm Nick Landon, and Lord willing, we'll be back next week. Until then, by the grace of God and Jesus Christ, we'll be standing firm.